Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.
You know, folks, for all the debate about belief and non-belief in today's world and how everyone becomes pigeonholed by one or the other, Dr. Tomas Halik teaches that God requires us to persevere with our doubts, carry them in our hearts, and allow them to lead us to maturity. For Dr. Halik, patience is the main difference between faith and atheism. Faith, hope, and love are three aspects of patience in the face of God's silence, which is interpreted as the death of God by atheists, and is not taken seriously enough by fundamentalists. Using the gospel story of Jesus' encounter with Zacchaeus, Dr. Halik issues an invitation to all people who stand, like Zacchaeus did, on the sideline, curious but non-committal. And, you know, the fact that Jesus gravitated to the poor and the marginalized means that he also has a special place in his heart for diligent seekers on the margins of the community of believers. Gee, that sounds awfully familiar to me. The book is called Patience with God, the story of Zacchaeus continuing in us. Boy, I've had so many people bring this book up to me in the last year. And finally, I got a hold of one and been pouring through it. I've had a friend go through it as well, who's a little smarter than I am. You know what I'm saying? He's a scholar. Because I get stuck in these books. So this is a guest I've wanted to have on our show for quite a while, Dr. Tomas Halik. Nice to hear from you, sir. You are in Prague right now, I think. Is that right?
Yes. I greet you and all listeners in Canada. We have an evening called in Prague.
Your evening already? It's already nighttime. What time is it there right now?
Yes, 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. And so I guess if you're a theologian, if you're a philosopher, if you're an author, you'll be up till 3 in the morning with deep thinking, correct?
Sorry about
that. Oh, listen, thank you for your book. And I want to say right at the very beginning, please don't worry about your English. I struggle with English as well.
Thank you very much. I'm ashamed about my broken kitchen English.
No, it's fantastic. And we also had a caller from Prague who called into the show a few minutes ago and wanted to make sure that they could listen online. So we've got listeners all the way over in your country as well.
I see.
Well, I have many, many questions for you, but Dr. Halik, the first question I have for you is, I want to hear about your spiritual journey. How did your faith start, and then how did it evolve? Does that make sense?
Yes. So I was born in a secular family in Prague, an intellectual family. My father was editor of the Czech writer Karel Čapek. I was born just in the year when the communists came to power, 48. And I grew up without any religious education. So Bible was in our family something like the Homer or the Greece myth or something like that, part of the education, but not a way through belief. And till my 18, I was practically no contact with the living church, because the church in our country was so suppressed. There was the only possibility to celebrate a mass, but nothing more. There were no monasteries, no church school, no newspapers, and so on. So I met when I was 18. So I started perhaps with reading Chesterton. Chesterton Orthodoxy was a very important book for me. And I started to think about this metaphysical question. And first step was something like a philosophical belief without any relations with the church and with the living Christianity. And then once I met in Prague one priest who was a wonderful man, and he was a man of humor and a high education, and I was listening to his preaching, and it was the face with a human face, first in my life. And then in 68, I met many priests. They were released from prison after many, many years. And they were for me really gave me a testimony for faith. It was the 68, the Prague Spring, and it was the spring of my life. I was 20. It was the spring of my faith. I was 2 years after my conversion. It was a political spring in our country, many hopes in some liberation. And it was also the spring of the church. It was just after the Vatican II. So it was for me perhaps the second step. And then I discovered church in the form of this priest. After many years in prison, they were really great. They gave me really a great testimony to church, and also this secret circles of young people praying together, discussing together. And then came the Russian occupation in August 68, and another 20 years of persecution. This persecution was not so drastic like in the Stalinistic era, but more sophisticated. And in that time, I finished my study. I studied philosophy and sociology at the Philosophical Faculty in Prague. And then I was thinking about becoming a priest. But there was only one priest seminary in our country, completely controlled by the secret police and by the regime.
Wow.
And I got no chance to join the seminary because I got already contact with Václav Havel and with the dissidents. So the only way for me was to study theology secretly and to accept the ordination secretly in the private chapel of a bishop in East Germany. In East Germany was a little bit better situation than in our country. Even my mother didn't know that I was a priest. It was so risky. So 11 years I did my priest activity in underground. My official job was a psychotherapeut with drug abusers and alcoholics in Prague. And in that time, this relation among the civil job, civil profession, and the priest activity was for me something very important. I think it was very important time to live in a normal civil situation, in the secular society, in the civil profession, to know the questions of the people and the language of the ordinary people. So not the accent of heaven,
yeah.
And not the special church phraseology. And I think it was very, very important. And in the time, I was collaborating with the Kardinal Tomášek. He became a hero in our country, and he was almost 90. And I prepared his open letters to government and so on. And then came the so-called the revolution in 89. And then was the beginning of another possibilities. I became the general secretary of the Bishops' Conference. I became pastor in a church in Prague, in the very heart of the old Prague, in front of the Charles Bridge. There was a university church. And then I became president of the Czech Christian Academy and also professor in the faculty at the beginning, at a theological faculty. And then I moved to the faculty of philosophy.
I am so glad that you took the time to explain that to us, because, you know, typical North Americans, we don't care about anybody unless they're from here. You know what I mean?
Yes, I know.
And it's refreshing to hear your story, because simply of the persecution aspect, we don't know persecution over here.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said this for a lot of years now, the best thing for North American Christianity will be a big dose of persecution.
little bit of persecution is always good.
Yeah, well, but at the same time, Dr. Halika, I don't want any persecution. I just want I want all the other Christians to have persecution, not me. So this is quite a story, and in this book that you've written, Patience with God, has really been getting a lot of attention with a lot of big thinkers over here. So let me ask you, how much of this book resonates with your own personal story? Are you a spiritual battler?
It just resonated with my spiritual story, of course. I didn't write practically anything until my 50. And when I was 50, I realized, so the flowers are out, I must bring that, the fruits. And then I escape every year to a hermitage in Germany near the contemplative monastery. There is a hermitage, there is a little house, and I'm there absolutely alone for 5 weeks. There is no radio, no TV, no newspaper, no emails, and I'm just praying, meditating, and writing. And the writing is also the sort of meditation or prayer for me. And I start with an autobiographical book, and then every year I'm writing a new book, because I've got a very bad fantasy for the Christmas present, so I must write a book and to have before Christmas.
Oh, boy.
A present for my friends and relatives. And there are already 8 books. They were translated into 8 languages already. This is the first one to English, in English. There will be another one in October, perhaps, produced also by Doubleday, Confessor's Night. Confessor's Night is the title. And I always bring something from my experience, because in all my life, I always realized when I was listening to a professor, to a teacher, I asked myself a question, what is behind? What is behind this theory? Are there also some crises, some questions, some doubts? What is his life story?
Yes, and that's what I'm asking you. That is the same question I'm asking you.
Yes, and when I knew something about the story, about the life story of an author, so it was for me a key for his theory. And also, I'm always, yes, of course, my faith gets through many crises. It was not only the persecution time in the communist. Sometimes is our situation in freedom more complicated. There are many Christians, they were used to have a great enemy, and they are not able to live without an enemy, and they are finding a new enemy, the Western liberalism, the modernity, and so on. And I think it is not an enemy, it is a challenge. And also that every crisis, each crisis is a challenge, is a chance to stop for a while, to go deeper, to recognize the broader context. And I think crises are good.
Wow. Okay. Before Christmas, I announced to my listeners that I was struggling with my faith. And when I came, I was in Israel for a month over December. And when I came back, I said I wouldn't talk about where I'm at spiritually anymore publicly, for a number of reasons. So I'm breaking a couple of my own rules here, but I want to do this with you because there are some words that have had a very big impact on my life, and these words you have written. Allow me to read, I guess, a commentary that someone wrote about your book. Can I read this to you, please?
Yes, of course.
I sent this to you in the email, so you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
I think Tomas Halyk has produced one of the best and most beautiful responses to the new atheism in his recent book, Patience with God. His argument is that the real difference between faith and atheism is patience. Atheists are not wrong, only impatient. Now, right away, the evangelical Christian is going to hear that sentence and they're going to say, they're going to shiver. They're not going to agree with that. But I want to keep going. They want to resolve doubt, the atheists, they want to resolve doubt instead of enduring it. Their insistence that the natural world doesn't point to God or to any necessary meaning is correct. Their experience of God's absence is a truthful experience, shared also by believers. Faith is not a denial of all this. It is a patient endurance of the Almighty of the world and the experience of God's absence. So, faith is patience with God, or as Abdel Bestavros puts it in the book's epigraph, patience with others is love. Folks, listen to this. If you've tuned out because I'm reading, then listen to this line. Patience with others is love. Patience with self is hope. Patience with God is faith. Is that an accurate description of what you're trying to say?
Yes, of course. Yes, of course. I think the function of faith is not to allay our thirst for certainty and safety, but to teach us to live with mystery, to live with mystery. Faith and hope are expressions of our patience, and so is love. Faith, like love, is inseparably linked to trust and fidelity. And trust and fidelity are proved by patience. Faith, hope, and love are three ways of coming to terms with the experience of God's hiddenness, silence, absence. We exercise sometimes this darkness. And it is a very different path from either atheism or facial belief, fundamentalism, or religious enthusiasm. I think that atheism and fundamentalism both are shortcoming, are too simple, too superficial attempt to overcome the mystery of God.
Okay, so in processing my crisis of faith, people have said a variety of things, which some can be easily summarized into one category, which would be best described by this sentence. Just hang in there, Drew. This too shall pass. Is that what you're saying?
First, I admire your honesty that you stopped your program and you were thinking about all these things. One of my previous books has a title, What is Without Trembling is Not Firm, What is Not Shaked. And I'm saying that faith and doubt are like two sisters, like siblings. They mutually need each other. They correct each other, complement each other. So faith without doubts, without critical questions, without crisis, could lead to fanaticism, fundamentalism, but also doubts without the basic trust could lead to bitterness, to despair, to cynicism. I think they need each other.
Here's another quote, which your book is so hard to read, not because it's a laborious read, but because there's so much to digest. You have these amazing concepts and quotes, page after page after page. So thank you for giving me a headache.
Thank you.
So listen, here's a quote. In the same way the church must shed ostentation in order to undertake missionary activity in the world of the socially poor, it must also shed many of its certainties if it is to enter the world of religious insecurity.
Absolutely. I also wrote another book which has a title, Touch the Wound. And this is a meditation about the scene from the Gospel. The Apostle Thomas is touching the wounds of Christ. When I was in India, in Madras, it is the place of the martyrdom of the Saint Apostle Thomas, the legend. And I realize this misery of the people in India. And now I recognize, oh, it is the wounds of Christ. The misery and sorrow of our world, they are the wounds of Christ today. and we are not allowed to say with Thomas, my Lord and my God, without touching these wounds of Christ, to ignore the misery. It seems to ignore Christ. But they are not only the social misery. They are many darkness and sorrow in human souls. They are wounds of heart. They are wounds of faith. You know, I love the legend about Saint Martin. The devil itself appeared him, Saint Martin, in the figure of Christ. But the Martin asked, where are your wounds? And I think God without wounds, church without wounds, religion without wounds, priest without wounds, faith without wounds, they are not authentic. They are not truthful for me enough. I can see God only through the wounds. It is my theology of cross.
Wow. You see what I'm saying? I have to take a minute and just process this. Here's a phrase that you've used a number of times, and if you don't mind, I'd like to steal it from you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course.
Naive, vulgar theism.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I just love it. Absolutely love it. Can you describe that? I mean, does that mean God is readily available?
Yes. There is this naive faith and also naive atheism. When atheism or faith became just a mass phenomena without reflecting, without thinking, so there is no God. But, you know, I love the philosophy of the contemporary Irish philosopher Richard Kearney. And he's saying we cannot say God is here, or God, there is no God, because God is nothing like a cup on my table. His book has a title, God Who May Be. God is coming to us as a challenge, as a possibility, as a task also. When Moses is called by God from the flame, so God said to Moses, if you take this task, go and liberate my people, I will be with you. So it is a challenge. God is giving us a chance. He's not coming like a quite normal thing among other things. He may be. He is coming as a possibility. He offered himself.
Hmm. What labels are you comfortable to put on yourself? And I'll give you an example. In processing where I'm at spiritually, I've tried to explain to people in a shorter way, because I know most people aren't that interested. So I don't want to talk about myself a lot. And contrary to popular belief, I don't want to talk about myself all the time. So I package it into a small description, and this is what I've said to people. These days, I think I would consider myself a red-letter agnostic theist.
Yes, I think I understand it, because it's very near to the spiritual path, which is very sympathetic to me, and the so-called negative theology, apophatic theology. It's saying about God who he is not. We realize the greatness of the mystery of God, that God is behind our words, our imaginations, our ideas, and we must destroy the idols. Many people have religious idols, has a religious naive imagination, and this negative theology, and also some sort of atheism, helps us to destroy these idols and to open the sphere for real, the mystery of God. And in face-to-face to the mystery of God, the atheism is going back to the dogma of atheism. The agnosticism stopped with the questions and doubts. The faith belief tried to suppress the doubts and critical questions, but the major belief tried to believe also with all these doubts and questions, to entrance the cloud of the mystery.
Okay, so what labels are you okay with? Some have said that you are agnostic. Are you?
No, I'm not. I'm the believer with questions. I think that my belief must withstand and endure all the doubts and questions. I think it is the very important thing for faith. The faith must be so mature to stand up to endure all these questions, because we are on the way. So maybe I can say I'm the believers on the way. We are all the community of pilgrims, and we are. And Saint Paul writes that in this world we see only as a riddle, only imaginations, only partly. And this patience is also this eschatological patience. Also, we must go with hope and with joy until the very end. And also, in the arms of God, we will see, hopefully, the fullness.
We are on the phone with Czechoslovakia, over in Prague, Dr. Tomáš Halík. Halík, I think I'm pronouncing that right, I hope.
Yes, yeah.
And is there any news that you'll be coming over to Canada? Will you be coming to Toronto next week by any chance?
No.
Because we sure would love to have you come and visit. And if you ever come this way, would you please let us know? Let me know. And
thank you. I've got now very much invitations. The Archbishop of Melbourne, after in Australia, after reading this book, invited me for 10 days to give lectures to his priests and media people and students. And then I have another invitation to South Africa for August and for many European cities. I hope I will come to Canada too. And I'm also finding a publisher for the other books, because it is only part, it is only fragment. I'm always thinking in this way, I hope deeper and deeper.
Well, it's quite refreshing. This is a lonely journey because you understand this, I think. I mean, you're basically saying that the only person capable of addressing as Zacchaeus is someone who knows his name, someone who once was, or to a certain extent still is, a Zacchaeus.
And so from
one Zacchaeus to another, it helps the loneliness when I come across a book by an author who is writing from a spiritual vulnerability that admits weakness, that almost attacks the notion of certainty. Because what's happening, I'm on a Christian radio station here in Toronto, and the majority of listeners that listen to a Christian radio station
They're believers.
Well, they're believers, yeah. But there's a lot of certainty out
arrogant believers.
Yeah, and so I'm getting challenged all the time. You know, just I'll give you an example. In a week and a half, I'm going down to Hollywood to meet with some people, and one of them is an actress named Diane Cannon, and she is very certain about her faith, and she wants me to be certain about my faith. But all of the things that she says and how she says them, I don't understand anymore. As a matter of fact, it becomes irritating to me. Do you know? I'm also an irritant to them. My lack of faith bothers them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, of course, it's a provocation. It's a provocation, but I think everybody, every believer has some doubts and open questions. And also every atheist, if he's not stupid, has some doubts about his doubts, about his atheism. And I think the people, they are suppressed their own doubts. They are very often projecting these doubts on the others, you know, the very militant believers and very militant atheists are making the people, they are not able to live with their own doubts. They projecting their own doubts on the others, and there they are able to struggle with them. They are not able to struggle with their own doubts. In their hearts, I think the battle between belief and unbelief is not battle between two camps of different people. It is a battle inside of our hearts, on every heart. And people, they are not able to accept the doubts and to work with it. They are in a danger then that they will project these doubts on the others. And I think it is one of the roots of the religious violence in the world, because there are many tensions in our world. And the rhetoric and the symbols of religions are very powerful. They can be used for good and also for bad. And sometimes we use this religious, this certainty and this religious rhetoric and symbols as an instrument in the battle against the others. And then the conflicts are becoming very, very dangerous. So I think it's very important to learn to work with our own questions and doubts, and to doubt about our doubts too.
Well, I'd like to finish this time by reading from your book just a little segment here. I don't underestimate the church. Therefore, even though my own conversion occurred mostly outside its visible walls rather than within the family of the faith, a Christian faith undoubtedly has a legitimate ecclesiastical dimension and is not a purely private matter. However, I do not intend to steer all dialogue about faith onto the topic of the church, and certainly have no wish to discuss gossip about scandals in the church or speculation about church policies, let alone the future of the church for that matter. Whenever I see a church in decline somewhere, in whatever sense, I do not despair. After all, I personally have lived through a great deal, and Christians in the course of the 20th century saw and lived through much more than I have. But I don't shrink from the holes left in the church roof by some tempest or other. I recall that it was through those gaping holes that I first glimpsed God's face. Folks, if you haven't got it by now, this is a book you want to have in your library. It is called Patience with God. It is by Dr. Tomáš Halík, and all the way from Prague, thank you. Your English was tremendous.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
I look forward to chatting again sometime.
Okay. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Wow. Thank you for that. I've been waiting a long time to speak with Dr. Halík.
That was intensely gratifying and intensely overwhelming all at the same time.
And yet, I know that there would be people that would phase out during part of that interview because... we're talking about some heavy stuff here.
Yeah,
and if you're living in candy floss Christianity, this is not the stuff for you.
And when I said an arrogant believer, I think I needed to qualify myself. Like, for me, there's a big difference between confidence and arrogance.
Mm-hmm.
You're a confident guy. I mean this aside from faith. You don't have to walk around telling everybody how great you are and how wonderful you are.
Although I do.
Yes, we know that. Just in case the people in LA are listening, the thing I wanted to say is when I find that when people have to walk around saying how wonderful their faith is and how not yours is, they're arrogant. It's a complete lack of confidence that someone has when they're arrogant.
Yeah.
So, you know, shut up and just live your life. Is that clear enough?
Karen DeThreedy, yes. Of Tim's Holy Word. Folks, a short break. When we come back, a little over time as usual, but we're moving along and we stop where we need to stop. Chad and Sarah Markley, they grew up in the church, got married, fought every day, then began to get wasted and party on the weekends just to escape and cope, even while Chad was leading worship in their church. Eventually, porn crept into the marriage. Eventually, Chad became a workaholic. Eventually, Sarah had an affair with Chad's friend. Eventually, one of Sarah's friends told their pastors, ratted them out, and eventually, well, we'll hear the rest of the story when we come back from our short break, and then the Imperials later on the show. Stay with us.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.
Maybe you've been thinking about advertising your organization on the radio, but don't really have the budget for a long-term marketing campaign? Well, what if we gave you a show? The Drew Marshall Show is currently offering an innovative advertising concept for the small business owner or charity. With web stats and listenership at an all-time high, Canada's most listened to spiritual talk show is offering you an opportunity to partner with us, one show at a time. Consider sponsoring one show and we'll introduce you to our listening audience for the day. Drew will mention your organization every hour during our four-hour show, including a live phone interview. We'll also post your logo and website link on our website for an entire month. If you're thinking about promoting a special event, product, or upcoming sale, or if you just want to test the radio advertising waters without a huge investment, then consider becoming a one-day advertising partner with The Drew Marshall Show. Go to drewmarshall.ca for details or call Joy 1250 on 905-845-2821, extension 367. That's 905-845-2821, extension 367.